While 2021 wasn't as miraculous as any of us wanted, we have made progress. We're stronger, in large part thanks to science and life-saving vaccines.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. That was, again, Governor Gretchen Whitmer during her State of the State address, her fourth State of State address yesterday, talking about her plans for this year, a year in which she will stand for re-election in November. I want to continue the conversation about what the governor said yesterday and what she just said to us here on the program, but we also want to hear from you. What did you think of Governor Gretchen Whitmer's State of the State speech last night? What do you think about her job performance as governor so far? Are you going to vote for the governor for re-election this November, or are you looking for someone else who might catch your attention and capture your vote? As always, we also want to hear what issues are most on your mind right now as we get ready for this election year here in Michigan. As always, the number on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work into the conversation. I want to welcome two really expert voices to the conversation right now as well. Rick Pluta is the state capitol reporter for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick, welcome back to Detroit
Today. Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, it's always great to have you here. And Lauren Gibbons is a reporter who covers Michigan politics and policy for MLive. Lauren, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so both of you just heard my conversation with the governor, and of course, you heard her speech last night. Here's something that jumped out at me, a distinction between the two. In her speech last night, she kind of seemed to be saying, hey, it'd be great if we could get schools back open for everybody. But when I asked her about it today, she says, look, schools need to be open. And she was more forceful about it. I wonder what you make of this attention that she wants to give to, you know, the tension between virtual learning and in-person and the continuing specter of COVID. Is she taking a stronger stance, I guess, on this than she has before? Rick, I'll start with you.
At least rhetorically, I mean, I think that's a good point. At least rhetorically, she's taking a stronger stance in terms of saying that kids should be back in school. And we know that having kids not in classrooms, not in seats, not in front of their, you know, school computers, close to the library, interacting with students, instructors, support staff, isn't optimal. It's not best. It's just been the least worst option while we've been dealing with COVID. But the reality is that we are moving into the management stage of how we, you know, deal with the coronavirus. And I think that is an acknowledgement of that.
What do you think, Lauren?
Yeah, I think it was fascinating to hear in her segment just now that she will be discussing this with some of the school districts that have chosen to either go remote again or have some part-time remote learning in addition to in-person. Not a lot of schools are doing this at this point. There's a lot of schools at this point that are back in person, back in the classroom. But, you know, some districts have made a different decision, and a lot of these decisions have been made at the local level, but we are getting to the point where parents and lawmakers and, you know, a lot of people following this conversation want to send their kids back to school. So I see the governor's stance on this and her, you know, I guess more rhetorically forceful, as Rick said, comments, it indicates the kind of changing tides about remote learning.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it also just mentioned that just another example of the governor in this speech really seeming to want to avoid wedge issues that Republicans are planning to use in this coming year and presumably in the upcoming campaign.
Okay, so let's talk more generally about the speech that she gave last night. I thought it was a very election-minded speech, I guess, in a couple of ways. One, she had tax cuts that she wanted to talk about, or the restoration of tax credits in some cases. In other words, hey, I'm going to put money in your pockets before you go to vote in November. And she stressed over and over that, hey, I can work with Republicans. Here's some issues that I have been successful working with them on, and I'm willing to talk to them about these tax cuts and these other things. She did not take after State Senate Leader Mike Shirky, for instance, for the really, I think, obnoxious behavior that he's indulged over the last couple of years with regard to her, essentially palling around with the folks who threatened her life, really, really outsized bad behavior. Instead, she's saying, look, we can do this together. We have done this together. I think that's all about looking toward November. Lauren, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think, just to start, the imagery that she chose with that, manufacturing plant in the background, speaking off-site in the Detroit Diesel plant, that was in reference to her recent work with the Republican-led legislature to, get more investment from GM and potentially entice other large-scale employers to invest in the state, essentially. So that was one thing that she was really hammering home, trying to show that she was able to work with the Republicans. I think, she's going after some low-hanging fruit here with the retirement tax proposed cuts. That's something that, it sounded like a lot of Republicans could get on board with, although you're seeing in several Republicans yesterday that, they'd like to see more broad tax relief, especially considering good news coming from the state revenue side of things. The state has billions of dollars in surplus right now. Obviously, that's not something that we can count on going forward, but a lot of Republicans are seeing that and saying, hey, maybe we can do more here.
Rick, what did you think of the tone and the approach of this speech?
The governor was very soft in her delivery. I guess this would be the ear version of optics, but she was very soft in her delivery. That it wasn't the fiery Whitmer, and we know that she can summon that up depending on the circumstances. And there were even some, a couple of wedge issues that she talked about, the Oxford school shootings, for example, but didn't bring up any type of gun control. That she talked about abortion without ever bringing up abortion rights or a woman's right to choose. She just spoke, I somewhat obliquely, in my opinion, about choice, and that she would veto any bill sent to her that would limit choice, presumably because she didn't say it directly, referring to the U.S. Supreme Court decision and the very real possibility that Roe v. Wade will be reversed, and not mentioning that if Roe v. Wade is reversed, that Michigan will automatically revert to an abortion ban and, wouldn't be subject to a governor's veto in this instance. Which, by the way, we should also point out, has not stopped some Republicans from still saber-rattling and saying they want to send her a bill just to double down on that. But it's not something that we expect would have a practical effect if Roe is, in fact, overturned.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to social media and put comments there, and we'll try to include you in the conversation that way. Let's go to Jerry in Detroit. Jerry, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
All in all, after listening to to the governor's State of the State address. I think she'd done a pretty good job as a governor. I only wish that while she was here doing your interview with you, if you had asked her what she thought of her possible Republican challenger, who I tend to call the David Clark Jr. of Detroit, James Craig, and what she thought about his challenge.
Great question. Lauren and Rick, what do you think?
I guess I'll jump in. It wouldn't typically in a state of the state address, and we do agree, you know, chime in if you think I'm wrong, that this was in many respects a re-election state of the state address. And I mean, you can't take the politics out of politics, but this would not be a forum for this governor or any governor to use to directly attack political opponents, you know, people that you expect to be on the ballot. And two, just as a tactical matter, why would you give James Craig or any other opponent the juice of mentioning them in a speech like that? That if you're an incumbent governor, you kind of want to go around almost ignoring the fact that there are challengers who just don't have the stature that you have. And Lauren, waiting for you to argue with me.
Oh, well, I don't think I plan to argue. I agree in the sense that, you know, this moment is typically policy oriented, although it is interesting to point out she didn't mention any Republican names. Frankly, she didn't mention a lot of names at all. She did memorialize the victims of the Oxford shooting at the beginning. There were a few other examples littered throughout the speech of various names, but she wasn't calling out dignitaries. She wasn't, talking about elected officials that she worked with necessarily. This was more focused on the policies as opposed to the people. So she wasn't necessarily saying, hey, you know, I worked really closely with Republicans on auto insurance changes. She was saying, we got this done, which is a little bit of a different message.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Jerry, thanks very much for the call and the comments. Let's go to Kelly in Plymouth. Kelly, welcome to the show. Hey.
I'm just very disappointed in the governor's scorecard on the auto no-fault law. She has systematically dismantled the entire system, and it's quite a shame. I think everyone can recognize that a mistake was made on Mackinac Island, and I think that true leadership is recognizing a mistake and fixing it. And I'm just not seeing her step up to the plate to make change.
Kelly, great issue to raise, and it's one we did not hear from the governor about during the speech last night. Rick Pluta, what's the reason she won't talk about this? What's the reason not to take another stab at auto insurance reform to fix what I think almost everybody now agrees was probably a big mistake?
A very intriguing question that I don't have a perfect answer for, except that she didn't want to go there because of the controversy. And both the governor and at least some of the Republican leadership in the legislature have said that this isn't working entirely as we had hoped, that there are positive aspects, that auto insurance rates, especially in places like Detroit, have gone down, but that there are some things that need to be fixed. And that could have been a moment to, you know, make a call for action to return to the table and make some adjustments. And we did not hear that for some reason. And my suspicion is that it's because that would have been an opportunity for actually, you know, both ends of the spectrum to complain. That governor wasn't sticking by the decision that she made to sign the bill on one end, and on the other end that that she wouldn't acknowledge that it was a mistake in the first place and try to restore the system as it was, which is not going to happen.
Yeah. Lauren, what do you think?
Yeah, and this is an issue I've been following pretty closely, and I've been hearing, from so many who one, are concerned about how the catastrophically injured are suffering from some of these changes. But then you're also hearing from people who say, well, maybe it's gone down a little bit, but I'm still paying a lot of money for car insurance. And experts who studied this have said, you know, in Detroit and other areas with high minority populations are still paying on average more for their car insurance than other people across the state. So it's still still a major issue. I think you're starting to see a lot of people wondering whether this, whether this massive bipartisan overhaul really did that much in terms of changing, in terms of making auto insurance better for Michigan. And it's hard for the governor and it's hard for the legislative Republicans who really pushed for this change to say, well, maybe it didn't work, because that was one of their marquee bipartisan achievements. So I would imagine that that's part of the reason it didn't come up more during the state of the state.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Kelly, really appreciate the call and you raising that important issue. Let's go to Gene in Detroit. Gene, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen. I'd like to ask your guests about the promises that the Whitmer administration made 4 years ago to dissolve the Financial Review Commission and to stop taxing the pensions of Detroit City retirees, and when they think that she's going to follow through on those commitments.
Good question, Gene. Lauren, I'll you start this time.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And during the State of the State, it did sound as though she is really trying to get that through. She spent a lot of time on it in her 26-minute speech, comparatively. So I think that's something that she believes she can work with Republicans on. And it did seem as though a lot of Republicans were open to that change and potentially work together on this. However, I do think a lot of Republicans will want to, perhaps go further in terms of tax cuts. So it's unclear whether the administration would, work with Republicans. But it does seem as though both the administration and Republicans are open to compromising on this issue. That said, it is an election year, and it could get complicated as some of these races get more competitive.
Yeah. Rick, what about this pension question?
Well, I think Lauren touched on something really important, which is the zero-sum nature of negotiations, especially in an election year, that is this going to be a case of we can't win if they can't lose on both sides of this, but especially on the Republican side, since the governor has already proposed this. And it seems to me that the biggest danger in this situation of a pension tax repeal would be the one-upsmanship that we're seeing. That you say pension tax, well, we say income tax, and we say income tax at this level, and we can start arguing about different types of deductions. And that's what we saw. I think probably everybody on this panel got the same tsunami of press releases where Republican responses very much veered towards the, well, she stole our idea, or this isn't enough. We need to go further. We have a lot to work with. This is the time to deliver quote unquote tax relief to, working Michigan families. And so I think the biggest danger to deal making in this environment is people going more.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Let's go to Daniel in Detroit. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on again. My wife is a school teacher, and she's been teaching for a number of years. She got into the benefit packages before they got all cut. And, so her retirement is pretty set for her if there's a retirement when she gets there. My question is, when the mortgage crisis hit and all the belt tightening happened across the state, the teachers' union and the teachers got really whacked in the pay department. Their starting salaries went down to around $40,000 a year. their benefit package. They're paying 50% of their health care. They've now got a 401k. They no longer have a pension plan for these teachers. We're having an extreme teacher shortage right now. Does the governor plan to boost this back up and take care of these teachers? Because our kids' education is the absolute most important thing to the future of this country.
Daniel, really appreciate the call and the really passionate issue there. Rick, what's the answer to Daniel?
Well, my sense from the speech is that the governor's focus, and to some degree the legislature as well, is more on luring young people into the teaching profession rather than directly confronting this morass that would be trying to overhaul what happened with teacher retirement and public employee retirement plans and pensions. So I think it's more in that direction, which is we'll help you pay for school, we'll give you bonuses, things like that, than directly confronting pensions.
Yeah. Lauren?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to bring up because you are seeing teachers who have been putting up with, you know, having among one of the more difficult jobs during the pandemic of trying to learn how to teach kids remotely, of having to navigate this course of getting back to in-person school, making sure they're safe, making sure their students are safe. And, you know, I think they are bringing up these points that, you know, it's not easy. We're not getting paid very much. And I think that is a key component of moving forward and addressing these shortages, especially as the push for, you know, safe in-person learning during a pandemic gets louder. You know, a lot of teachers are very concerned about this, and I think that's something the legislature and the governor are going to have to be cognizant of.
Yeah. Okay, let's
and
take
just
another,
don't take
okay,
that.
Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead,
don't
Rick.
Take what I said earlier to suggest that I don't think that nothing is going to happen on the pension tax. I think it is. I was just and Lauren did a great job of pointing out that it's just that this is a lot more complicated than just dealing with that particular aspect.
Yeah. Okay, let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Rick Pluta and Lauren Gibbons about the governor's State of the State address and her policy initiatives for the year. We want to continue to hear from you on the phones. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put your comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences. The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about Governor Gretchen Whitmer and her State of the State address yesterday, what she said she would like to do in the months ahead. My guests are Rick Pluta, State Capitol reporter for the Michigan Public Radio Network, and Lauren Gibbons, who covers the State Capitol for MLive. If you would like to join the conversation, call and tell us what your reaction was to what the governor said. What do you think of the job that she's done over the last 3 years? Are you going to vote for her in November when she stands for re-election, or are you looking to find another candidate, maybe one of the Republican hopefuls who have already said that they want to challenge her? Maybe some, one of those folks has got your attention and your interest. As always, the number on the phones here is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and will work you into the conversation. Rick and Lauren, I do want to talk about this, the prospect of working with Republicans on some of the things that the governor talked about. I asked her in the interview today whether she was willing to give some ground on tax proposals that the Republicans have in mind. Corporate taxes, of course, are always a focus for them. They also would love to lower the income tax to 3.9%, I think is the number that they have in mind. How likely is it that she will be able to negotiate with them in an election year to get some of these things done? Lauren, what do you think?
I think it's possible. It is an election year, so that's obviously a factor in terms of, you know, in terms of how well they can ultimately work together. It just kind of depends on what the parameters of the conversation are, you know, what ground the administration is ultimately willing to give. It will be interesting because, you know, especially when it comes to some of these other tax arenas that Republicans mentioned, the governor didn't. They were citing, you know, the state's rosy financial picture. Some of the state revenues are higher than, frankly, historic highs at this point, partly due to, you know, pandemic aid in the last couple of years. Hmm. So that is not funding that the state can necessarily rely on. So, you know, as Republicans put forward proposals for other possible tax cuts, I think we're going to hear a lot from fiscal experts and see how that might affect the state's pocketbooks moving forward when we can't rely on this one-time surplus. So it really, you know, comes down to, I think, a numbers game at this point.
Yeah. Rick, what's the chance that she can get this done?
Well, I guess I'd point out that Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey, who is a conservative by just about any measure, was pretty coy about signing on to the 3.9% income tax number. He said it was something worth discussing, at least within the Senate Republican caucus, but he wasn't ready to go there. And Lauren is right, of course, about, you know, a lot of this windfall that the state is seeing is from one-time funds, which means that if we commit that to some kind of ongoing tax cut, that at some point that well is going to run dry. And then either that revenue is going to have to come from somewhere, or we're going to have to look at cutting state services that, even though conservatives will complain about big government, a lot of those services do affect Republican areas of the, you know, of the state. And so there's going to be a reluctance to cut those services. And I guess another thing that comes to mind is this could open the door once again to a tax overhaul in Michigan, that we're very, very reliant on income taxes and not so much the sales tax on stuff. But we don't tax services as we're moving more and more into a services economy. And conservatives and Republicans and even a lot of Democrats will no doubt resist. But this is going to reopen the discussion on whether or not we should be spreading the sales tax burden more widely across all sectors of the economy.
Go ahead, Lauren.
That actually brings up a really good point, because over the last couple of years, when services were so restricted during the pandemic, Michigan's sales tax right now is booming. That's part of the reason we have such a big revenue surplus. I think economic experts don't necessarily know where that's going in the future, whether it will rebound, or I think a lot of people are kind of expecting it not to be quite so high as it has been over the last couple of years. But the changes in consumer trends when it comes to sales tax could be a factor here.
Mm-hmm. So
when
people
stop doing all that online purchasing.
So let's talk about the field here, the people who want Governor Whitmer's job and will have a chance to make their case to voters this year. What kind of threat does she face, and what are the things that she might be challenged to answer for, I guess, by her opponents? Lauren, what do you think?
I think the biggest factor here continues to be the COVID-19 response, and that hasn't gone away. A lot of people still remember those restrictions. Republicans really hammered on it, and you know that was where a lot of the groundswell of support, at these protests and throughout the pandemic, that came, from an anger about these COVID-19 restrictions. So I think that's going to continue to be, a thread in these conversations. The pandemic isn't going away. Of course, the administration has not restricted activities for quite some time at this point, but, it's still not that far removed. And obviously it came under the Whitmer administration. So I would imagine that to continue to be a major piece that the governor, didn't hit on too much during her state of state address, but will have to answer for on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Rick, what's the field beginning to look like, and how successful could it be?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of elements that go into this equation, and certainly the speech we heard last night was one that was not really meant to roil the waters. On the one hand, we have a Democratic president, which means that Democrats tend to suffer. That tends to be lower on the ballot than in the statewide races, but it's certainly not unheard of, and it's certainly not unheard of in Michigan, because it is still nevertheless difficult to dislodge an incumbent, in part because of all the powers that come with it, that everything that a governor does is news, whereas everything that a challenger candidate does is political. And so, there's that to figure into it as well. So what are Republicans? And we've got the uncertainties that, we've already witnessed versus the path that COVID and its variants take. So the governor is looking to show strong, stable leadership that even in uncertain times, there's been a steady improvement, both in terms of the threat posed by the virus and the its effect on schools and the economy. Republicans are going to continue looking to exploit essentially that uncertainty and find some way where the path to recovery takes an unexpected turn, and then asking the question, why weren't we ready for this?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, she's got such an advantage this year because of the economic situation. I mean, tax receipts going up and all the revenue from the federal government, you would think that it's a sweet spot from which to run for re-election. Think of the last time a governor, an incumbent governor, had this kind of teed up opportunity. But there are all of these things that
John Engler,
right?
Yeah.
I was going to say. I mean, really, it's been that's almost a generation ago, right? But there are all of these differences now, and there are, you've got this pandemic that is still such a wild card, that I wonder if it's as easy as it seems.
Well, and that's why we're hearing right now, inflation. It's like a drumbeat from the Republican side of the aisle.
Lauren, what's your last thoughts about what we will see this year from the governor?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll continue to see, at least from, the policy perspective, continue to see efforts to have these bipartisan conversations. We'll see her budget proposal very soon, see what specifics she's hoping to accomplish with her, it promised record high investment in education. I would be on the lookout for that. I think it one of the main things that we'll all be watching in the coming months is just how how the administration and the Republicans work together as we settle into these new district lines, as the governor starts ramping up for elections, as the Republican field begins to whittle down a bit more. All of these are factors in whether elected officials can come up with good policy.
Okay. Lauren Gibbons and Rick Pluta, it was really great to have both of you here to talk about the governor's speech and her plans for the day. Thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, so great to be here with all of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Detroit Today is produced by Jake Neer and by Sam Corey. Our program director is Joan Isabella. Our technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan, and our associate producers are Amanda Duran and Chantel Phillips. Detroit Today's music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.